Welcome to the Oldie Literary Lunch, sponsored by Noble Caledonia, the world experts in small ship cruising.
I sometimes feel that I should really almost apologise for having written another book on Oscar Wilde. After all, he is a figure much written about. I mean, no year goes by without the appearance of at least one or two, sometimes three volumes about this great man. In the last few years, there have been books on his library, on his sex life, on his love of Paris, on his American tour, even an entire volume devoted to his four-week summer holiday in Worthing in 1894. An excellent book in many ways. But what there hasn't been, really, for many years, is a full biography of him, giving the story of his amazing life from his cradle in Dublin, in Ireland, to his grave in Père Lachaise in Paris. And really not since the great book written by Richard Ellman, large green volume from Hamish Hamilton, published in the late 1980s. And that's, well, over 30 years ago now, and perhaps inevitably in the course of those three decades, an enormous amount of new information has come to light. New manuscripts, new documents, new letters. There have been new ways of searching for and discovering information. The amazing digitalization of the historic newspaper archives have made the recovery of and the discovery of references about characters, particularly from the late 19th century, suddenly possible in a way that they weren't. I mean, previously, if you were interested in any subject for a sort of biographical study, you would have to head off to the British Library's newspaper library in a distant suburb of North London called Colindale, right at the very end of the Northern Line. And it would take you most of the morning to get there. And then you would summon up the document, the newspaper you were interested in, you thought there might be something about your chosen character in, and you would hope that they would present you with a bound volume, a huge thing the size of a paving stone, which would have the actual newspapers, which you could scan your eye over, at least, just searching for this the name of your significant figure. Although too often there was the sad news that they had transferred that particular publication to microfilm, and then you'd have to wrestle with the microfilm machine and sort of slowly turn the wheel and see this the film shoot across the screen, sometimes too slowly, sometimes too fast, and after an hour of doing that, you couldn't tell whether the screen was moving, the text was moving, or you were moving. And at the end of a day of eye-wearing toil, you would return back down the Northern Line, perhaps having recovered two references to whoever you were working on. And probably by the time you got past Golders Green, you'd realise, well, one was really only a footnote, and the other one actually might exist already in some other volume. But now, of course, with the wonders of the digital age in which we live, you could type the name in double inverted commas, Oscar Wilde, into whatever search engine that the London Library e-library offers, and suddenly dozens, indeed hundreds, perhaps even thousands of references appear, which obviously that creates its own challenge and excitement, but then through that it's been possible greatly to enrich our understanding of Wilde's life. And of course there have been more traditional ways of searching out new information as well, but all this new information created such a an enriched picture that I thought it needed to be brought together and integrated into a new and, I hope, compelling whole. And so that was the challenge that I set myself. But as I worked on the book, sort of really over the last six, almost 7 years that it took me to research and write, I was certainly very aware of how present a figure, Oscar, remained in our life. While many of the great figures of the Victorian past have dwindled with the decades and the centuries, he has really grown in stature and insignificance for us. And I mean, really, once you begin to see life through the world in prison, you realize that he's everywhere around us. And indeed, in this last year, I mean, only yards from where we are lunching, they, you know, had a whole year of his plays running in season at the Vaudeville Theatre. I mean, an amazing achievement. I mean, you know, which other dramatist of the 19th century, you know, or even the 20th century, has, you know, could sustain the accolade of having a whole year's season of their work. But Wilde carried it off effortlessly. And it was a fitting place for him to have such a success. And it's a very happy coincidence that we're having our lunch here, because really his career began on the Strand, or just off the Strand. This was sacred ground for him, because when he came down from Oxford in 1879 as a sort of young man full of hope and ambition, he took lodgings just off the Strand in a street called Salisbury Street, since obliterated and lost to London, I think taken over largely by the Shelmex House complex. But it was here, sort of on this thoroughfare, that he thought he could establish himself. And his vision, when he was leaving university, he was sitting around with a couple of his friends, and they were discussing what they would do in their new post-university life. And one of his friends was the scion of a solicitor's business in Bristol, and so he was returning to the family business to become a lawyer. The other was from a Scottish landowning family, and he was thinking he would have to go back and manage the family estates. But they asked Oscar what he was going to do, and he said, "Well, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm probably writing, you know, a poet. I'll be a poet or a playwright. But what I really want to do is to become famous, and if not famous," he added rather rashly, "notorious." And he arrived in London with this vision, a remarkably sort of novel idea, really, in the late 1870s. And now, of course, it's become the common stock ambition of all young people to become famous instantly. They leave university, if they ever go to university at all. But back then, the notion of celebrity as a thing in itself was really barely thought of, but Wilde thought of it. And he was helped enormously towards this goal, which he achieved really within 2 years of arriving in London. He was able to boast that he was the most paragraphed man in London, except for murderers and politicians. He was asked whether he might consider becoming a murderer, if not a politician, to make himself even more famous, but he said the thought of being having his face caricatured in the Daily Telegraph was too depressing, and he thought he'd rely on just a sort of vicarious semi-literary fame instead. But he was helped in his goal by the fact that he had an elder brother who'd come to London at the same time and had become a journalist. And he wrote theatre reviews and leaders for the Daily Telegraph, but he also wrote gossip for a weekly paper called The World. And he, right from the beginning of Oscar's London career, began to insert little comments made by Oscar Wilde, the poet, as he was referred to. He'd published two poems also in The World at that stage. They began to create an awareness of Wilde, not only as a literary figure, but as a sayer of amusing things. And really, the first of his phrases that gained a London-wide notoriety was sort of minted on the Strand, I mean, within the sort of very narrow ambit of where we are here. And it really carried his idea, which he had brought with him from his time at Oxford, where he'd fallen under the the influence of Ruskin and had come to an understanding of the huge importance of beauty in life, in all aspects of life, that beauty and the appreciation of beauty was not something confined merely to art or to nature, but that you could discriminate between the beautifulness of particular London buses, which at that stage all had different coloured liveries. So he would have a notion as to which was the most attractive bus line that one should travel on. And on one of his first encounters with a London pharmacist, he'd been very disappointed. He was feeling ill. He went to get some pills, but the pills were a very disappointing brown colour, he felt, and couldn't possibly cure him. And he asked whether he couldn't have some of those nice golden ones that he'd seen, which he was sure would make him better instantly. And on that score, because he really his ambitions on the literary front were divided between the charms of poetry. He wanted to be recognized as a poet. His mother was a celebrated poet in Ireland beforehand. But he also had hopes to write a successful play, which he loved the theater, and he also recognized that a successful play would open up both a wider vista of fame and public appreciation, as well as, of course, being financially very remunerative. So he haunted the theatres and tried to make friends with all the great theatrical figures, the actors and the impresarios. And the theatre he haunted the most and that he admired the most was the Lyceum, just at the corner of the Strand, which was then under the celebrated management of Henry Irving, who put on these remarkable seasons of plays with his leading lady, Ellen Terry. And Wilde attended all the first nights. One of the poems that he contributed to the world was a glowing endorsement of the beauty and brilliance of Ellen Terry. But when he went to see Irving's production of Macbeth, he came away sort of enraptured by the whole encounter. And his comment on it was, while everyone was talking about the dramatic side of Irving's performance, Wilde focused mainly on his legs. And his line was, "Both his legs are exquisite, but his left leg is a poem." And anyway, this was taken up by Willie and mentioned in the world, and then taken up by all the other newspapers and repeated and satirized in the different magazines. But that was the sort of moment when Wilde's wit became known to the wider world of London. And it's very lovely to think that it all happened within 100 yards of where we're dining. So as you step back onto the Strand after this dinner, you can imagine Oscar walking with buoyant step along the pavement, happy to have coined such a phrase of that. Anyway, thank you very much.
The Oldie magazine is available at all good newsagents, but you can also subscribe and book tickets for the literary lunches at theoldie.co.uk.